our headlines. Iran once again slams a Swedish court's illegal jail term for its citizen, calling for the full acquittal and immediate release of Hamid Nouri. Israel rejects the appeal request for the release of the Palestinian prisoner who's been on hunger strike for 172 days, despite his critical condition. Following a spate of global scandals, the CEO of Israel's NSO group that makes the controversial Pegasus spyware steps down as part of the company's reorganization. Thank you for joining us. Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amirabdollahian calls for the immediate release of Iranian national Hamid Nouri, who has been handed a life sentence by a Swedish court. Amirabdollahian described as unacceptable the court's process of trial and verdict. He said Nouri should enjoy basic rights, including medical access, as well as the right to contact his family. The top Iranian diplomat made the remarks in a meeting with the Swedish ambassador to Tehran. Hamid Nouri was detained in Sweden in 2019. He was sentenced to life over the alleged rights violations against members of an anti-Iran terror group, MKO, in the 1980s. Tehran has already called the charge against Nouri baseless and fabricated. The MKO is infamous for plotting assassinations and killing hundreds of Iranians since the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979. Iran says it will not give up the rights of the nation in any talks or meetings amid a flurry of diplomatic exchanges to revive the 2015 deal known as the JCPOA. The Iranian president says his administration will powerfully continue efforts to resolve the country's problems and push for its progress. Ibrahim Raisi vowed to tie people's not to tie people's livelihoods to any foreign factor. He said Iran has secured a considerable part of its demands from some other countries. The comments come amid intense speculation about the fate of the JCPOA after Iran provided its written response to the most recent EU proposal to salvage the pact. Tehran says Washington must now show flexibility and take a realistic approach if it really wants a final agreement. Political commentator Sayyid Mostafa Khoshchism says it's the West, and Europe in particular, which stand to suffer if a deal to revive the JCPOA is not reached.
The Americans have apparently not provided a fully yes answer, otherwise when they sent their reply to the EU, Mora would immediately send that positive reply to Iran. I don't know if they would say, something half and half or something like no, but it's to their detriment. It's to their loss. You know, Europe is now grappling with the outcomes of the Ukraine war and rising energy prices. In about a couple of weeks, 3-4 weeks from now, when pre-fall or pre-cold season oil purchases start, the prices would rise. And even if American released more of their strategic reserves, again, prices would rise, because as it lowers, I mean, the U.S. strategic reserves, it leaves a negative impact on the market and the prices start to rise. Right now, we are seeing the introductory or preliminary signs of this problem in Europe. Europe is paying a higher price for lack of energy and energy prices, rising energy prices, and in future, in the cold season, they would pay more. So Americans know it. Europeans know it. If they were really logical, I mean, especially the Americans, they would take whatever they could right now and give Iran a positive answer. Because in about a few weeks' time, nations in the West, the United States and especially Europe, they would pay a higher price. And the leverage on them would be heavier. This is no secret.
The top Israeli court has rejected an appeal for the release of a Palestinian prisoner who has been on hunger strike for 172 days. According to Khalil Awabda's lawyer, the court turned down the request and affirmed the decision to freeze his administrative detention. Awabda was supposed to be freed on September 15th. But the court denied the request after Israel's internal spy agency Shin Bet handed over a confidential file to the judge. The Palestinian resistance group Islamic Jihad has also demanded Awabda's release as part of a ceasefire that ended three-day Israeli aggression on Gaza earlier this month. Awabda has been on hunger strike since March 4th to protest his administrative detention, a policy Israel follows to indefinitely imprison Palestinians without charge or trial. Calls are growing for the UK government to push for the release of a Leeds University student who's been languishing in a Saudi prison since last year. She was arrested when she returned to the kingdom to visit her family. The student is charged with following and retweeting dissidents and activists. Earlier in our news review program, we discussed why Western governments turn a blind eye to Saudi Arabia's checkered human rights record.
It's time for our news review of this bulletin. The UK government is facing calls to act after a PhD student at Leeds University was jailed in Saudi Arabia for using Twitter. Opposition Labour lawmaker Hilary Benn has called on Foreign Minister Liz Truss to press for the release of 34-year-old Saudi Salma al-Shahab. Benn says that Britain has a duty to speak out over the case of the mother of two. Al-Shahab was detained last year after returning to Saudi Arabia to visit her family. Earlier this week, an appeals court sentenced her to 34 years in prison, followed by a 34-year travel ban for tweeting on women's rights and for retweeting posts calling for the release of imprisoned activists in Saudi Arabia. The ruling has drawn growing global condemnation, with activists calling it outrageous and shocking. Al-Shahab says that she has been subjected to abuse and harassment during her interrogations. Saudi Arabia has been under fire internationally for its poor human rights record, but earlier this year, Truss declined to criticize the kingdom, saying that Riyadh is an important partner of the UK. Sayyid Mohsen Abbas is a journalist and political commentator, joining us from London. And we also have Masoud Shajara, head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, also joining us from London. Gentlemen, welcome to you both. Masoud Shajara, first over to you. What has occurred over here is quite shocking, and I'd like to find out from you how you see the claims made by Saudi Arabia on the advancement of human rights, especially through its crown prince, obviously, and what this verdict actually truly speaks.
Just enough, the behavior of the Saudi Arabia. I mean, this is supposed to be a reformist regime. And if this is a reformist regime, God forbid what the rest of the regime is all about. And the fact of the matter is outrageous, is unbelievable, it's shocking. You know, really, it's difficult to find the words to describe this. But what is even more shocking is the fact that Britain and the rest of the Western world are totally silent. The silence from these government is shocking and is deafening. These are the same government who consider themselves the champions and flag bearer of human rights, and they go around even start wars for bringing democracy and human rights, and here they are totally silent and using financial interest as excuse for allowing this sort of barbaric action, outrageous action, to take place, and you know, supporting it with their silence.
Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, do you think that the UK should remain silent here, or should it say something? How do you view its either action or inaction?
Well, obviously, from any kind of ethical, civilized point of view, the British should speak out, but the fact remains, Britain always puts its economic interests over any kind of ethics and morality. And all the window dressing we hear about human rights and protecting the lives of people around the world is really just it's just for the purpose of duping their own public and creating a public relations image which makes them seem like they're kind of all holier than thou. The reality, of course, is much darker, because Britain, as with most of the Western or the Anglo-American empire, the Western powers, behind them there are economists that dictate their political policies. In this instance, let's just look very carefully. We know that there are about 30,000 prisoners held, political prisoners of conscience held within this Saudi system. We know that the Saudi courts are a complete joke in terms of the way they operate, and they operate with impunity, where arbitrary arrests are fine, keeping prisoners incommunicado in detention, and then handing out 34-year sentences for somebody who likes a couple of tweets. I mean, doesn't that just sum up exactly what their kangaroo courts are about? And the kind of people that they lock up largely are reformists, human rights activists, lawyers, innocent, political people and social workers as well. Religious scholars aren't spared, and bloggers. So there's a whole litany of cases, and this is just one amongst many. But going back to what I was pointing out about the economic hypocrisy of Western powers, well, MBS has a stake in Twitter, and Twitter is at the heart of all of this this latest case in which this young lady, Salma Shahab, has been very, very ruthlessly dealt with. And MBS, Mohammed bin Salman himself, has a stake in Twitter. They have a public investment fund, the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund, and it owns something like 17 or 20% of the stake. So you can see that there's a conflict of interest, and yet it's this Twitter account which was used by Salma al-Shahab which has got her into jail. But just in this same way, you can see the corruption that exists between Western corporate companies, the Western political parties, which are also subject to the lobbying of the Saudis. You saw that in the Khashoggi case, for instance, and you see how they literally get away with murder, let alone sentencing a virtually innocent woman for the most menial of supposed misdemeanors, which was simply stating her political views or support of people who were not necessarily in favor of the government. This is a draconian establishment supported by a very devious and cunning power behind them. They do it because they get oil. And I'm afraid until the Western public takes responsibility and campaigns against their own governments, there can't be any change with what the Saudis do, because they were just given the green light by Joe Biden, who came over and gave them carte blanche to do what they wanted, essentially. And you're seeing now the consequences of Biden's visit, where the Saudis are becoming emboldened to incarcerate, capture, torture anybody they like on the most kind of the menial, most menial of misdemeanors, if they are that at all.
Thank you for that, Saeed Mohsin Abbas, journalist and political commentator, and Masoud Shajar, head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, both from London. Thank you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review. Thanks for tuning in.
Welcome back. The chief of an Israeli firm, NSO, which makes Pegasus malware to spy on activists, politicians, journalists, and even heads of states worldwide, is stepping down. A company spokesperson says the move is part of an internal reform to ensure the firm remains one of the world's leading high-tech cyber intelligence. The company, which is said to be highly indebted, says it would now focus sales on countries belonging to the NATO alliance. For years, it's been mired in controversy for selling spyware to government clients to spy on their citizens. Recently, the European Commission found signs indicating that phones of some top EU officials were hacked using the same malware. Pegasus can switch on a phone's camera or microphone. NSO Group claims the software is only sold to target criminals and terrorists with the approval of Israeli officials. But media have cited many court documents suggesting the malware was even provided to countries with questionable human rights records. Around two-thirds of Germans are unhappy with the work of Chancellor Olaf Scholz and his fractious coalition. According to a recent poll, 62% of Germans believe the Social Democrat is doing his job badly. That's a record number compared to just 39% in March. Just 25% of those surveyed said that the chancellor is doing his job well. The support for the Social Democratic Party now stands at just 19%. The poll comes as Scholz and his coalition has faced crisis after crisis since taking office in December. Scholz has had to deal with a war in Ukraine, an energy crisis, soaring inflation, and now drought, all pushing Europe's largest economy to the brink of a recession. Critics have accused him of not showing sufficient leadership. Russia is investigating the death of the daughter of a controversial political commentator in a car bomb blast near Moscow. According to the investigative committee, Daria Dugina, a journalist, was killed on Saturday night after an explosive device ripped through the car she was driving in. The vehicle belonged to her father, Alexander Dugin, a veteran philosopher known for his staunch anti-Western views. He is viewed in the West as a major ideological mastermind and a driving force behind key aspects of Russia's foreign policy. The investigators believe the murder had been premeditated and was a contract attack. Moscow says if investigators determine that Ukraine is responsible for the attack, it would regard the case as an act of state terrorism. Kiev has denied any involvement in the incident. Our correspondent Marina Kortunova tells us more about the circumstances surrounding the suspected bomb attack killing Daria Dugina. Have a listen.
At 6 o'clock yesterday evening, Alexander Dugin gave a lecture, Traditions and History, at the Tradition Festival in the village of Zakharova. This is Moscow region, not far away from Kubinka and from other places. His daughter was also there as a guest. At half past 9 o'clock in the evening, Daria left the festival on the car Land Cruiser Prada. The explosive device was planted in the car that belonged to Alexander Dugin, who at the last moment decided to get into another car and followed Daria. The car left for Majaiskaya Highway and the explosion occurred near the village of Bolshie Vizhomye. The bomb went off while the vehicle was moving. After the explosion, the car crashed into a fence and Daria Dugina, who was driving the car, died immediately. Directly behind the Dasha was his father, who saw all this happen before his eyes. He's in the hospital at the moment. And the death of Daria Dugina is sacred. They beat Dugin. They wanted to kill him physically or kill him through the death of his beloved daughter. And the idea that the word and idea continue to be an important and dangerous subject of life.
Moving on to Ukraine, where the war is now approaching its seventh month. Moscow says it has destroyed an ammunition depot in Odessa region. The Defense Ministry says the depot contained missiles for U.S.-made HIMARS rocket and other Western-made anti-aircraft systems. According to the ministry, sea-based caliber missiles were used in the attack. Ukrainian authorities say five missiles were fired from the Black Sea overnight, adding that air defenses shut down two of them, while the other three hit an agricultural facility. Moscow also says two M777 howitzer were destroyed in the southern region of Kherson, and a fuel depot was struck in the Zaporizhia region. Meanwhile, Ukrainian authorities say the city of Nikopol near the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant was shelled overnight.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Until the international community brings sufficient pressure to push Israeli regime authorities to abandon their long-standing policy to subdue the Palestinians of Gaza, this vicious cycle will continue, says Omar Shaker, Palestine director at Human Rights Watch, in an article published under the heading Cage, Smother, Subdue, and Repeat, Israeli Regime's Gaza Policy. Stay tuned for more.
Thank you.
Clips of Israeli regime airstrikes raining down on Gaza. Images of homes reduced to rubble and the men, women and children buried below. Sirens heralding the latest barrage of Palestinian rockets fired towards Israeli population centers. The dread of a rising death toll calls for restraint. This sequence has played on a loop time and time again in recent years. For those who care about Palestine, the overwhelming outrage, the feelings of helplessness and the pangs of heartbreak sting each time. For those in Gaza, it's a struggle for survival. As Gaza-based Human Rights Watch colleague Abir Al-Masri wrote reflecting on last year's hostilities. He said, "I struggle to find the words to describe the terror of lying awake at night, not knowing if I'd see daylight again, the anguish of those I interviewed who survived, the obliteration of their families by Israeli regime strikes, the agony of seeing Gaza's prominent towers reduced to mountains of rubble." On August 5th, the Zionist regime authorities struck the home of Taysir al-Jabari, an Islamic Jihad leader, without clear provocation. Israeli regime Prime Minister Yair Lapid cited an imminent threat, as he claimed it was by Islamic Jihad. Following the Zionist regime's arrest of an apparent mistreatment several days earlier of another Islamic Jihad leader in the West Bank, Bassam al-Saadi. On August 5th, Israeli regime authorities struck the home of Taysir al-Jabari. At least 49 Palestinians in Gaza were martyred, including 17 children, during the Zionist regime strikes. And also, the human rights groups investigated the event, and it will take some time before there would be a full accounting of what took place exactly. But there were some preliminary observations based on years of documenting previous rounds of hostilities against the Palestinians in Gaza. First, the Zionist regime's dropping of explosive weapons with wide area effects in the densely populated Gaza Strip causes foreseeable harm to civilians. During last May's escalation, Human Rights Watch documented unlawful Israeli regime strikes and war crimes, including strikes that martyred scores of civilians, wiping out entire families and destroyed four high-rise Gaza towers full of homes and businesses with no evident military targets in the vicinity. According to a Save the Children report from June, 4 out of 5 of the children they interviewed in Gaza reported living with depression, grief and fear after 15 years of closure. And the Palestinian digital rights group Hamle reported again that social media companies were taking down posts by Palestinian and pro-Palestinian activists about events on the ground. Human Rights Watch last year documented how Facebook wrongfully removed and suppressed similar content, including about human rights abuses committed by the Zionist regime during the May 2021 hostilities. If we have learned anything, though, it is this. So long as there is impunity for serious abuses by the Zionist regime, Gaza remains an open-air prison, and Israeli authorities continue to commit the crimes of apartheid and persecution, there will be future rounds of hostilities. Until the international community brings sufficient pressure to push the Zionist regime authorities to abandon their long-standing policy to cage, smother, and subdue the Palestinians of Gaza, this vicious cycle will continue. Thank you.
Food for thought.
Hello, everyone, and let us ponder a wise saying from Imam Zainul Abidin, peace be upon him, the Holy Prophet's fourth infallible heir. Fear God and know that you will inevitably return to Him. When everyone will see his good and bad deeds right before his or her very eyes, he or she will wish for the longest period of time to separate himself or herself from bad deeds.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z, an introduction into Husseini lifestyle. Today's lesson, the patience and forbearance of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome everyone. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host Hussein Hinzano. And in today's lesson, we're speaking about the patience of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam. Now, when we're talking about the patience of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam, we're talking about him standing to see so many atrocities before his eyes. Al-Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam went through a very difficult period of time when he saw the death of his grandfather. People were so hard on Al-Imam Ali during that time, and Imam al-Hussein faced all this, and he had patience against all this. More than that, he also had patience during the time of the rulership of his brother, Al-Imam al-Hassan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam, because his brother also went through a very difficult time of leadership. The Umayyad rulers were so strong by then, and they stood against him in a very bad way, in a way that even they reached to a point of poisoning him and assassinating him through poison. So Imam Hussein faced so many difficult calamities. And also among the very main, on the 10th of Muharram, such calamities, or so very big calamities, descended upon Imam Hussein, one after the other, that patience used to rock in front of them. So while the grief had not ended for him, and all the difficulties and sorrows had besieged him, he saw the bright stars of his Ahlul Bayt, how the swords were cutting them into pieces. He witnessed this with utmost patience and urged them not to act anything against it if it pleases Allah. He told them to whatever act you're going to do, make sure it's the one that is going to please Allah and nothing other than that. This was the highest level of patience that Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam portrayed at the time of his life.
Why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
As-salamu alayk, ya Aba Abdullah.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio, and we're talking about the patience of Aba Abdullah Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam. He faced so many bad moments during his lifestyle when he lived with his grandfather and his mother, and when also he lived during the period of the rulership of his brother Hassan Al-Mujtaba alayhi salam. And during the 10th of Muharram, Al-Imam Al-Hussein also faced so very big calamities, such that he is reported to be urging his very close members of his family. He urged them, "O my Ahlul Bayt, be patient. O my cousins, be forbearing." That means be patient. "That after this day, you will not have to face any humiliation and oppression whatsoever." His Eminence Al-Imam Al-Hussein used to see his dear sister, the Lady of Bani Hashim, how the severities of the tragedy had sorrow had shattered her heart. He counseled her that she must maintain patience and content with what Allah had decreed for them. So the most terrible tragedy that Imam bore with patience was the sight of his children and women suffering from killing thirst and from a very killing thirst. They were thirsty and they were seeking help, while he could only advise patience and steadfast to them and inform them about the everlasting rewards that they would finally achieve after all these difficulties. This was a very good level, was a very high level of patience that Al-Imam Al-Hussein portrayed during his time, and is the same type of patience that is asked upon me and you to act, to teach ourselves, to train our souls to have in whatever aspects of life we are, whether you are a leader or whether you're not a leader, or whether you're acting in any aspect of life, you should practice patience in the order that Al-Imam Al-Hussein showed us during his time of life. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Inshallah, until next episode, we will meet. Fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Better friends than you, but anyone stay here won't be alive tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. A deep silence filled the air.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
Whilst not being as painful as a broken limb, animals like humans suffer from chronic and acute pain from gum infections, broken teeth, and bacterial spread through the circulation. A 16-year-old elephant in Pakistan is one such case. Madhubala, suffering for years from a dental infection caused by a broken tusk, has finally got relief thanks to vets dentist. Named after a legendary Indian actress, Madhubala's eyes were taped shut, her legs tied to support her during sedation and subsequent treatment at a Karachi zoo. The vets had to use drills and other heavy surgical tools to extract the infected tusk. She is one of four African elephants being treated in Karachi by an eight-member team from Global Animal Welfare Group, Four Paws. A Pakistani court last year asked Four Paws to assess the health of the animals after local animal rights activists raised concerns about their well-being. The forest management plays a key role in mitigating climate change. Like many world countries, China has accelerated environmental and social structural changes in urban spaces to deal with this pertinent issue. The Dong Forest Park in Jinzhou, Liaoning province is one such project that has provided city dwellers enough space to breathe. It comes into being from what local people usually called rotten woods. The park on the northern bank of Xiaoling River covers an area of nearly 120 hectares. Nobody would come there before, as the place was full of flies and mosquitoes. But now, with the environment improved and water cleaned in the river, the place has turned into a wonderland, attracting locals and even foreign tourists.
Now the sky is blue, the water clean and the air fresh, with green greeting you wherever you go. The elderly play Tai Chi or do bodybuilding exercises here. Young people play football, basketball and table tennis.
Over the past 20 years, a large number of cities in China have undergone a brief but rapid urban expansion. Most of these cities are now facing social problems, such as an aging population and a high prevalence of chronic diseases. A comprehensive environmental improvement program in Jinzhou was initiated in 2014 in order to create space for those who want to take a break from their everyday works. England's Paradise Wildlife Park welcomes its new guest, an endangered red panda cub. The mother, Tilly, gave birth to the cub just 1 month after she lost her breeding partner, Nampang. Experts say Tilly had been under a breeding project for 4 years. The cub has been named Little Red, and his birth is being celebrated as a, quote, symbol of hope. Red pandas are classed as an endangered species and are on the red list of the International Union for Conservation of Nature. The bushy-tailed bamboo munchers dwell in high-altitude Asian forests, and their population is now fewer than 2,500. Lightning strikes are very powerful and misunderstood force of nature that we all often see being used in films. A spectacular lightning strike has illuminated the sky over the Scottish town of Dundee. A video from an eyewitness that captured the hypnotic scene has been shared on several social media platforms. The lightning in the clip can be seen sending several bolts in opposite directions. Below, a church spire is silhouetted against the lightning flashes. But lightning is not always spectacular, as sometimes it causes fire to tower and high-rises. Last month, a wind turbine caught fire after being struck by a lightning bolt in North Texas, United States. Forestry authorities in southwestern China have opened a new canteen for wild Asian elephants in a bid to stop them wandering into villages. The canteen in Yunnan province provides the animals with attractive and nutritious meals while exploring man-animal harmonious coexistence. During these years, the province has explored multiple ways to reduce the encounters between humans and elephants and try to keep the animals away from farmers' crops. There are now approximately 1,400 hectares of dining halls for elephants, with many expanding from 100 to 240, such as corn, rice and sugarcane. They are planted on a large scale and within easy reach of the elephants. The location of such canteens is extremely selective, usually away from villages and major roads, and the chefs are locals.
Stunning scenes in Spain as the last supermoon of the year illuminates the night sky amid fireworks and fairs marking the start of festivities for a public holiday. In Malaga, fireworks left the sky a mix of colours against the bright moon. There was also a spectacle of drones that lightened the sturgeon moon. Locals in the Canary Islands also celebrated the three-day holiday by lighting up a Ferris wheel as the full moon beamed beautifully in the sky. If the moon is within 10% of its closest distance to Earth at the moment of full moon, it is called a supermoon. The supermoon has various hues and appears bigger and brighter than when the moon is at its farthest point from Earth.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Have you ever heard of fighting nature with nature? Well, that's what the San Francisco Metro system in the U.S. did to stop pigeons from overrunning the place. The station has hired a hawk as the new guard to patrol the area. Pac-Man is a 5-year-old Harris's hawk who has taken up the perch at the station. In terms of experience, he is pretty new, as he finished training only 9 months ago. The station recently renovated its building, installing netting and spikes to prevent pigeons from nesting. But these birds still seem to find their way to hang around. So with the Falconer Force, Ricky Ortiz and his hawk were hired this summer to keep the pigeons at bay.
So a typical day is we get here, we make our round, we start off down in the bottom inside the facility, making sure there's no pigeons hanging out in there. And then we work our way up here to the platforms and just check the ledges and the roof and make sure that they're not trying to sneak in on us and keep them out. And he does a pretty good job of that.
The team patrols 3 days a week and Pac-Man is allowed to swoop in and scare any pigeons sitting around. The Falconer says less than half of the pigeons they left after the first week of Pac-Man flying and establishing the territory. Commuters and station managers say they also noticed the difference. The Falconer says he usually keeps his feathery friend happy on the job by giving him snacks throughout the day. This also encourages the hawk not to feast on the pigeons and local rodents.
Technology helps transform the global food production system and mitigates its impact on the environment. China's autonomous region of Tibet is turning barren land into fertile one using greenhouse technology. Once removed, Beinong County is now the largest off-season vegetable supplier in Tibet. The region has taken advantage of its highland conditions to develop a state-of-the-art agricultural structure. Beinong has now more than 2,200 modern vegetable greenhouses and nearly 12,000 hectares of planting area, some built at unimaginable altitude. But one cannot deny the role of railways and highway transport for making this county a hub for organic vegetables. The income of locals has also been significantly improved, and they are now living a happy and prosperous life.
We'll be right back.
If you're a private collector of wild animals, there is good news for you. A Pakistani zoo is auctioning off a dozen lions due to a lack of money to feed them and a space to house them. Lahore Safari Zoo currently has so many big cats that they have to take turns accessing paddocks. Officials say auctioning them will free up space and also reduce expenses. Zoo is currently housing 29 lions. The lions auctioned this week will be between 2 to 5 years of age. Each big cat is estimated to fetch around 150,000 Pakistan rupees. That's not too much, as some zookeepers claim. Even conservationists have expressed anger over auctioning lions to private collectors instead of transferring them to other zoos. Happy news for zoo goers in Nicaragua. Two adorable baby tapirs are born at a country's national zoo south of Managua, adding attractions to the visitors. Two endangered tapirs, a male and a female, were born hours apart at the weekend. In a video shared by the zoo, one of the newborns is seen suckling and walking near her mother. The director of the zoo says the babies are yet to be named but are in perfect health. Tapirs inhabit jungle and forest regions of South and Central America, with one species inhabiting Southeast Asia. They look something like pigs with trunks, but they are actually related to horses and rhinos. Nicaragua launched a project that seeks to conserve this animal in danger of extinction due to hunting and the destruction of natural habitat. Now we'll take you to mine-riddled French island, Chazoms, which is emerging from the ruins and gradually turning into workers' paradise. Chazoms, close to the port city of Saint-Malo, has an amazing landscape but remains uninhabited as it saw a devastating bombardment by the Allies during the World War II. The Nazi-occupied island was victim of the most bombings per square meter. Known as Martyred and Forbidden Island, it was opened only in 2018 after extensive demining efforts allowed the opening of a marked path. Now, every year, thousands of day trippers make the short boat journey, marveling at the spectacular maritime views and flourishing wildlife there. The safe area still makes up just 3% of the island, but it lets visitors wander between rusty cannons and bunkers. Some workers say they hope the trail will be lengthened to allow a complete tour of the island.
Africa is taking back some of its greatest treasures stolen by the British back in the 19th century. The Horniman Museum in London has agreed to return the artifacts to Nigeria. These are 72 relics, which include 12 highly treasured brass plaques known as the Benin Bronzes. The bronzes are a group of several thousand metal plaques and sculptures that decorated the royal palace of the once mighty kingdom of Benin since the 16th century. These artifacts were looted from a region in modern-day Nigeria in a British military incursion. They later ended up in museums in Europe and the U.S. African countries have been fighting to recover works pillaged by explorers and colonizers as Western institutions grapple with the cultural legacy of colonialism. The Jamtal Glacier in Austria has been losing around 1 meter of its surface annually. Scientists say the ice is a precious archive that is simply melting away and are surveying the area. Austrian mountain researchers say the glaciers contain an invaluable trove of ancient frozen leaves and twigs and other scientific treasures that can be lost forever. They say the time capsules, including the remote Jamtal Valley, are falling victim to climate change. In the 1990s, tourists found that 5,300-year-old mummy of Iceman near the same area. According to the international data, global warming has raised temperatures in Europe's highest mountains by nearly 2 degrees Celsius in the past 120 years.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The number of Republicans who have a very favorable view of former President Donald Trump has increased following the FBI raid on his Florida residence at Mar-a-Lago last week. The article you're about to hear has been written by Newsweek journalist Derek Roche. The article has been published by Newsweek and is titled, More Republicans Have Very Favorable View of Trump After FBI Raid. The number of Republicans who have a very favorable view of former President Donald Trump has increased following the FBI raid on his Florida residence at Mar-a-Lago last week, according to a new opinion poll. A poll from The Economist YouGov, published on Thursday, 18th of August, shows that 57% of those who identified as Republican now have a very favorable view of the former president, Donald Trump. That's a notable increase from the same poll the previous week, which showed that 45% of Republicans said their view of Trump was very favorable. The former president's overall favorability with Republicans remained unchanged at 80%. Donald Trump and his allies have expressed fury at the FBI raid of Mar-a-Lago, and the former president has claimed the raid was part of an ongoing witch hunt against him. Anger over the raid could potentially impact crucial midterm elections, even after Democrats appear to have gained ground in recent weeks. The Economist YouGov opinion poll was conducted from 13th to 16th of August with 1,500 adults and found that 23% of Republicans had a somewhat favorable opinion of Donald Trump, while 17% said their opinion was either somewhat or very unfavorable, and 3% didn't know. The previous opinion poll was conducted from 7th to 9th of August. The FBI search at Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence took place on 8th of August and showed 34% of Republicans had a somewhat favorable view of Trump, compared to 17% with somewhat or very unfavorable and 3% who answered don't know. In what may be a key finding, the opinion poll showed that the share of Republicans who said they were more enthusiastic about voting in this year's midterm elections had also increased during the same period. 51% of Republican respondents said they were more enthusiastic about voting in this year's election compared to previous congressional elections. In the August 7th to August 9th opinion poll, that figure had stood at 45%, representing a positive shift of 6 percentage points. The share of Republicans who said they were less enthusiastic about voting this year also fell slightly from 16% to 15%. A further 29% said they felt about the same, down from 31%. By contrast, just 36% of Democrats said they were more enthusiastic about voting this year, while 15% were less enthusiastic, and 40% said they felt about the same. Republicans also overwhelmingly disapproved of the FBI search at Mar-a-Lago, with 61% saying they strongly disapproved, and 11% said they disapproved. A further 10% strongly approved, and 11% somewhat approved. It remains to be seen if this apparent rise in GOP enthusiasm and approval for Donald Trump will have an impact on the upcoming midterm elections, where the former president has endorsed a number of high-profile candidates. However, the Economist YouGov poll also contains some good news for President Joe Biden and the Democrats. Joe Biden's approval rating has risen to 42%, a rise of 4 percentage points from the previous opinion poll, and his disapproval rating now stands at 51%, down from 55%. Disapproval of Congress has fallen from 58% to 52%, while 20% of respondents approved of the job they were doing. That's a rise of 5 percentage points from the previous week. Democrats have scored some recent legislative wins, including the Inflation Reduction Act, which passed Congress on 12th of August. While 63% of the American public still think the country is on the wrong track, that figure has fallen from 70%. Meanwhile, former Harvard Law School professor Alan Dershowitz has said people have a right to know what's in the affidavit that was used as part of the basis for an FBI search of former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence in Florida. Alan Dershowitz called for the unsealing of the affidavit during an episode of his podcast released on Thursday and referred to special warrants required to search medicine cabinets and safes at Mar-a-Lago. The former president's safe was reportedly searched during the FBI raid at his residence in Palm Beach, Florida, as part of an investigation into the handling of White House documents. Alan Dershowitz was part of Donald Trump's legal team during his first impeachment in 2020.
Midstream.
Have passed since the launch of the Islamic resistance in Lebanon, Hezbollah, a memory dear to the heart of every believer in the inevitability of divine victory, and for every believer who dreams of a day free from injustice and oppression in a nation that has nursed injustice and oppression since its early beginnings. With their tender flesh, they resisted, struggled, and persevered. They all came out of small houses from besieged neighborhoods. They saw their families being humiliated at checkpoints, their mothers killed, their fathers' bodies dismembered, their livelihoods stolen at the hands of an enemy wreaking havoc and terror in their country.